This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back to talk about Survivor, AU, Australian Survivor, week number six, as we check in with our chief international Survivor correspondent who is busy covering all the Survivor around the world. It's Shannon Gus. Shannon, how are you?
Rob, I'm here. I'm excited to be here, obviously. Always excited after a big week of Australian Survivor. And you're still hanging on, Rob.
We're going to make it. We're going to get to the end of this thing. I'm very excited. I've never completed an Australian Survivor season in the real time since the first one. And this one is much better than that. So I am very excited to be here. I've had a lot of fun doing these check-ins, and we've gotten a really nice response from everybody who's enjoyed hearing this kind of podcast. And we are very lucky to have a guest here with us today to talk about it all. It's our great friend, your fellow drafter. It's Puya Zamakili. Puya, how are you?
I am doing really, really well. I'm so happy I ended up checking out the show and catching up with the show, rather, about 2 weeks ago. It has been an incredible journey, and I'm honored to be here with y'all. Okay. So happy to be here.
Well, happy to have you here to talk about everything going on through 18 episodes of Survivor AU. And Shannon, let me just say that I am hearing from private conversations, for the U.S. Survivor players, we are noticing the Australian Survivor. And it is, people are very, very intrigued with the Australian Survivor product. The buzz is building.
I completely agree. I mean, look at my guest list. It's a lot of US people, but you know, it's getting global recognition and we love to see it. And everyone's done so well. 18 episodes in 5.5 weeks. We all did it. We did it together. And then next week it's going to be two mm-hmm. a week.
So 2 weeks. So how many episodes are left in the season?
Six. 24.
Okay.
Episodes.
So three more weeks of 2 episodes a week.
That is my understanding.
Okay,
personally.
Great. And we are at
I could be wrong.
And we are at the final seven right now. And so by your calculations, do you see there being multiple non-elimination episodes to come? I know that you probably give a lot of thought to these things.
Yeah. So if it's a final three, there are two more in 6 episodes, which is my major concern going into the next week. And if it's a final two, then there's only one non-elim. So that would be amazing for a couple of different reasons. But yeah, two would be hard because you wonder then, are they going to try do what they've done before where they like do a non-elim type week where, okay, they might send like multiple people to an exile as an example, which is, it sucks the life out of the show. And it's been such a frenetic season that has not slowed down. Mm-hmm. And even though I keep joking, like, let's slow it down. No, I don't want that.
This pirate ship is going full steam. George is still out there. Haley is rising though. But this was a big week. We lost, I know it was a cruise ship, forget SS. This was SSS. We lost Sam, Shawnee, and Sean all in a row this week. So three big players went out of the game. But yeah, we haven't heard from you this season. What's been your feeling here on Australian Survivor? And what's your history with the franchise?
So my history with the franchise, when they brought it back, I want to say it was back in 2016. I watched it from the jump, big fan right out the gate. I rode that all the way to All Stars, and then I fell off for two seasons. Yeah, yeah, 2 seasons back to back fell off. And then here I am once again, ready to go. And I've been loving this season. I mean, I was hearing, okay, so here's the thing. I was hearing nothing but good things, but anytime anyone was like, you have to watch it, my answer was the same, which was, I do not know if I have time to watch 3 episodes a week. And they're longer episodes. I don't know if I can commit like that. And then we got the best tribal of all time. And once that gets advertised to you, you get curious. You're, you know what? I'll give it a shot. Why not? I was free one night, started watching them, watched all 8 episodes in the span of like 12 hours. So caught up, and now I'm watching them daily as they're coming out on time. So it's been good there. And it is as good as advertised. I mean, here's my biggest thing for anyone who is curious about watching these shows. When a show has 3 episodes a week, it can be intimidating and it can feel like a lot. But when it's really good, you don't notice it that it's 3 times a week, and you do not notice how long of a time you're spending on it. That's a good sign. And that's how I felt. It's gone by seamlessly this week, 3 episodes in a row, boom, boom, boom. Don't even remember watching them. That's how quickly they went by for me. And I'm already waiting for the next 2 episodes now. It's been great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I really have enjoyed getting to watch this season. It's been such a delight. And Shannon, I really feel like that there is room in my life for more International Survivor at this point. And just on a personal note, I feel like that really the change for me, and I complain a lot about being on the East Coast as opposed to being on the West Coast, where I could get all my podcasts done earlier and go to bed. But because I am up in the morning, that's when I watch these shows. And so like those couple of hours when nobody's around for me to be doing podcasts with, that is like a good time for me to be watching these international reality shows. So I feel like I have room in my heart for Survivor South Africa and, you know, all of Survivor to come. So, you know, maybe that's the biggest difference of just like being on the East Coast and trying to do this as opposed to the times I've tried to do it on the West Coast.
You were going to regret saying that, but I kind of love the idea. Maybe we should do like, maybe you should binge whole seasons and we should do like check-ins every so often.
Look,
to see how you're
enjoying
them.
Very open to potentially, you know, looking back at Brains versus Broad. Best. But let's say that for the off season, okay. We still are very much active in this season.
Yeah, well, I'm like, okay, let's add to the work. No, but I think that's a really fun idea. All right.
Yeah.
Ideas for the, all of our ideas and podcasting schedule happens on the podcast, which I feel is like, okay, people less like professional. That. We're like, let's do this all season. But Pooya, I feel like your story is so relatable. Like that's what's been happening with everyone, right? Like they hear mostly about that episode 7 tribal council. And then everyone's been catching up in the space of a night. Like Rob, I know that you have referred to Russell Hans as Survivor Viagra, but that episode 7 tribal council, I don't know if I can think of a moment that has prompted more people to check out, not just a season, but an entire franchise of the show. Like it's crazy.
George is a gateway drug. I'm not sure exactly what that would be, but it's getting a lot of people hooked on Australian Survivor. Okay. So also in addition to what we're doing, if this is the first podcast that you're listening to about Australian Survivor this week, you're doing it wrong. Go back and check out what Shannon had to say with our great friend, Zach Wurtenberger, had a lot to say about 3 hours on that podcast. Plus also Shannon had the exit interviews as well from this week. That's in our Survivor Global feed, robinswebsite.com/global feed for all things that Shannon is doing, including her recaps of US Survivor, which somehow she is doing as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty tired. I booked a vacation yesterday, legitimately. I was like, this is my post Australian Survivor vacation. So yeah, no, but it's fun because it's been so great. I'm so glad that everyone is loving it. Rob, but people were mad this week. Are you angry too?
I try to avoid Australian Survivor Twitter so much. And really, it's your colleague, Mike Bloom, is like the first American to be like tweeting about each episode. What am I supposed to mute him? Like, how do I do this?
How do you get past me? Are you not following me? Like, I'm tweeting in the moment.
Rob, I don't know.
I have the cheat code for you. There are 3 franchises that I've muted the hashtag for, and I've just accepted that I'm not going to be in the Twitter discourse unless I manually go looking for it.
But
one of it's hashtag Survivor AU. I've muted that. Hashtag I've not seen a single thing, which is great.
Yeah. You know, I use a lot of lists and I think that that's what's screwing me up. But Mike's like posting. Okay,
so
like
you're checking Mike's more than mine. That's what
I'm not checking it. I think that maybe I've taken, I need to take Mike off the list.
The feed wants you to see Mike more than me. But anyway, it's all Mike's fault.
Anyway, so I am not unaware of the, but what are people mad about? That Shawnee went
home? No, yeah. I mean, there was like a devastation. I mean, it was mostly, I think, fun. You know, people calling in sick to work. Shawnee is an icon. People were upset about it. But I think for me, that's why it had the impact. I mean, we could have kept rolling on as the vigilantes, and we probably would have had fun with that because they were such a fun group. I mean, it would have been like a Kasaya type thing where, okay, maybe this is fun that it's a pogonging because A, there are fun moments in that, like the double idol fail, and because we like them so much. But you want a crack, you want a fracture and a blindside like this, a moment, a Rupert tragedy level moment like Shawnee. Like for me, as sad as it is, and it is devastating, like surely that's just like excellent television.
Yeah, the real disappointment for me was that George decided to take out Shawnee and not Liz, because I kind of feel like that if on Amazing Race, we've covered many seasons, and you know, we talk about a lot of times there's like somebody who's like the star of the team, and then they have a friend, and so that there was from a couple seasons ago, there was D'Angelo Williams, NFL player, and he had a friend named Gary, and we talk about Gary. A lot. And to me, the you know, with all due respect, Liz is the, you know, and Gary of shiz.
Well, you're not on Survivor Twitter, clearly, because people adore Liz.
They do?
I mean, come on. Have you ever been on Twitter, Rob? Like, in terms of the demographic, like, Liz fits into that. But I think Liz is really fun. I just think no one's Shawnee. You know, no one's going to be as entertaining as the first three-time Australian Survivor player. Like, she's going to be the star compared to almost anyone, probably.
Yeah. What does Liz's shirt "they know" mean? What do they know?
I don't know. Priya,
do you know? Who knows?
I don't know. I've been staring at it for so long and I don't know.
Well, seems like George knows, if anything.
George knows.
Given what went down.
Who knew? But even like when Shawnee got voted out, like George told her the thing. And she just like sat there and stewed. I like what you said about stew. That, you know, no reaction, nothing.
Like people love that she's ice cold.
I guess so. Remember, like, you know, when Alex got voted out and Heidi and Jenna, like, they got all mad and like, you know, like, give us something, Liz.
Okay, this is a fun segment for US versus AU, the random podcast we do. I fill Rob in on what's going on Australian Survivor Twitter. That Rob's only getting through Mike Bloom. And no, people love Liz.
No, I try to speed through Mike Bloom because he's...
Okay, block Mike. Just block Mike.
Ruin the show for me. Yeah.
All right, block him for the next 3 weeks. I'm sure he'll understand. But it's interesting that you say that. I think Liz is a really fun character. I think that there's like something fun in the fact that she's like the newbie who's learning from these other people. Like I have like criticized some of the reads, but I enjoy the emotionality. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the rawness of that. Something people, again, and as we go back to the theme of the podcast, it's something people have criticized about US Survivor, that everyone's so tapped in, that everyone's like, this is my dream forever. And I enjoy the passion, but there's something to be said about someone who kind of showed up here because she's an Olympian. I doubt is like a major fan of the show and is kind of learning it as she goes along and is letting us in on kind of those raw, real vulnerable moments.
Yeah. Okay.
Puya, what do you think? Do you want to get canceled by Australian Survivor Twitter?
Getting canceled over this. Yeah. Over this? Like, come this far? I'm going to get canceled.
Lucky
over
you'll never
this?
See it. Yeah, you're never get,
come
yes,
on.
Literally.
So this is how what I the, took what the, Rob what said. Is? This is how I took what Rob said. We love Shawnee.
Yeah.
It's not that we hate Liz or he hates Liz and he hates Liz. It's not that he's saying that. It's just like if he has
Liz.
To.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then you're going to get canceled,
Liz.
Rob. Please stop. Oh my
gosh. See, my take was if there must be a crack, not this crack. That's really where I was at. I was like, I don't want this to be the crack. Shawnee to be the crack here. But unfortunately, that's the way it fell. But I will say, yeah, Liz's ice cold demeanor, pretty fun. I'm not mad at that whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I do enjoy when a player who's clearly not a fan picks up the game and becomes passionate like a fan, I do enjoy that. I'm here for that. I'm always here for a new person picking up and falling in love with the game right before our eyes. Yeah. So I'm not mad at that whatsoever.
Before we talk about week six, can I go back and talk about something in regards to week five that has to do with George and Shiz and that conversation from, I believe it was from the first episode from last week, that something that I, you know, and I've come on, I said, I don't know if George can win, but something that I was very impressed with George from last week that I forgot to mention on the podcast that I was kicking myself was that when George said they know, he said that, look, Flick's not with us. And they say, no, we're play the idol for Flick. Like, he's like, all right, hold on, let me get back to you. Went back. And then when it came back and they were like, Flick's out, she's flipped back, that I was so impressed with George that he did not immediately go into, I told you it was going to happen. He didn't even, like, all right, well, let's like, and I thought that was very impressive, but that he didn't like do the, I told you so in the victory lap and didn't make a whole big deal about it. So that was just something from week five that I was super impressed with.
Yeah. Well, that's what I've enjoyed about Liz. Like, it wasn't that Flick moment, as bad as I thought the read was, how burned she felt by that. I kind of feel like you wouldn't get it necessarily from a three-time play. I mean, Shawnee, I think, felt burned, but Liz was almost like aghast, like, but we made deals and plans. And, you know, and I thought that there was like a realness to that. And it's something, again, you might not get as much in US Survivor where this, you know, well, not that we haven't had like possibly some bitterness, but it was kind of like, how it dawned on her with some of that lack of understanding and how she came to know it, that I think is an interesting element that, again, we don't necessarily get as much elsewhere. But I want to talk about this as we talk about week six, because I didn't get to talk about the edit as much in the recap, and I wanted to talk about it because the confessional charts are wild and they're out. And I have them here in two great confessional charts. I have Survivor Fan Sam has the numbers, and I have the times. Dan Owen puts out these amazing, beautiful charts with actually the timing of the confessionals, which I think is really valuable for,
like,
Australian
Survivor.
Like, how many
seconds?
Yeah, or minutes or hours. Oh, wow. If it's George, possibly. And I think that's really, really relevant for Australian Survivor, particularly because not all confessionals are created equal. Are you getting a 20-second reward explainer, or are you telling me your life story and it's 5 minutes? So do you guys want to play a game? Do you want to guess? Like, what? Where do you want to go with
this? Yeah, sure. I think it might be tough to guess the minutes. Maybe it might be in terms of making it a game. Yeah, but like Puya and I should take turns, and then the other person will say if they're over
higher or lower. Yeah. Very fun. But we do this on the podcast. The production meetings are happening on the podcast. Yes. It's great.
So how indicative of, even Jeff Probst has said a lot recently, there's no such thing as a winner's edit on Survivor. He laughs when people say there's a winner's edit. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
If the one season of Australian Survivor that I have seen from top to bottom, the winner did not get a lot of confessions. So,
well, she actually did. I think we just overlooked, like, Chrissy got more than you would probably think. But also, to be fair, you know, it's not the same as US Survivor where there's a finale with six people and then it all happens. You know, like, now there's seven people left. We're going to get down to it. Like, they're all going to get a lot now. Yeah. So it kind of builds up towards the back. But I mean, Chrissy was her own thing in terms of that being shocking.
And also, in fairness, based off of the last couple of seasons of US Survivor might have had a winner's edit and deleted it. Based off of the way they've edited some of the winners. So, okay. I just wanted to know if we come up with somebody like whoever's last place from this list, is that like disqualifying? That person's not going to win the show, the people that are like the bottom two?
Usually, yes. I mean, I think that Australian Survivor, it goes back and forth, but I think definitely recently, like, I don't know that I was expecting someone like Shane Gould, but the last few seasons have been, like, I think very telegraphed. They've leant heavily on it. Even, like, more under-the-radar winners who are great under-the-radar winners have been, like, they have to tell you and they have to have nicknames. They have to do the Australian Survivor thing where they will push that for a winner. And it is, I think, I mean, I was quite surprised for a lot of the last season. I think I might have been quite alone in that. I think other people saw it more, but they usually will push it quite a lot more. I think this edit to me has been different. I think it's been, we'll talk about when we do the game, the charts, but I've said it's more comprehensive. I feel like I know everyone. Compared to last season, there were major big game players that were completely invisible, and that ruled them out of winner contention for me because they should have had a lot more. This time, like, we'll look at, the numbers on it. Mm-hmm. But I think we have a good sense of pretty much everyone at this point. I mean, without looking at the charts, because I think this is what's important, without, like, getting the stats of it, do you feel like you know everyone? Do you feel like, edit-wise, anyone could win this, assuming it could be a final two from a game perspective?
So I feel like that the one person that would be the least likely to do it would be Matt. I think that Matt has had really very little story.
We know Matt now.
I guess we know him now, but I think that he would be. And I do feel like that Jerry has gotten lost in the sauce, really, since post-merch.
But he has had stuff. I mean, Jerry, I think, got even like two introductory packages, talked about his family, his son that he lost. He's been there.
Yeah.
He's
been there. The man, the myth, the legend.
Yeah. Pops. So, I mean, I think for me, like from an editor perspective, I don't know that I would rule anyone out of contention. For in its most basic iteration of Australian Survivor, like, the people at the very top are the people you'd look at. But I don't know. That's why I wanted to play this game and do and talk about the charts. Because I feel like the edit is beyond the charts a little bit for me.
Beyond the charts. Okay. And Shannon, could you give us a baseline? Could you give us Sean's stats?
Okay, the baseline. So Sean, on the numbers, Sean left on 52 confessionals.
52 confessionals and how many minutes and seconds?
And Sean had, and I've got flipping between charts, 10 minutes and 51 seconds.
Wow, okay. So that's our baseline. That's our sort of like...
And that actually is a good, that was a good baseline.
Okay.
All right. So what are we doing, George?
Okay. All right, let's save George.
Save George. Let's do Liz.
Okay. All right, Pooja, are you going to set the... Are we doing the...
The minute or the number of confessionals?
Let's do the number.
The number of confessionals.
I'd be interested to
talk
about the minutes.
So Sean at 52. I want to say more, but I think I'm going to be wrong there. I'm going to say 41.
For Liz?
Yes.
Where are you going?
I'll say higher than that. I think that she had probably had a lot when she went with Jordy to go to be with the supervillain. So I'll say higher.
She has 18. I'm so glad we're playing this game. That's exactly the point I'm trying to make. This game is already paying dividends. So glad we just decided to do it. That's my point, is that firstly, that's crazy. She had two confessionals in the first 9 episodes before the whole supervillain stuff. But that's what I'm saying, is we feel like we know her way more than 18 confessionals, right?
I don't see Liz as the winner here. I think you could make the case of she could have, Shawnee went out and she could be on this Natalie Anderson revenge tour. I did not get that from her in episode 18, that she is on the verge of, I will avenge you, Shawnee.
Yeah, I mean, she said it, but her actions probably spoke a little louder than words in terms of the fact that
I can't wait to have some Margies with you at Ponderosa.
But isn't that so interesting? So in terms of minutes, Liz has 7 minutes and 32 seconds, which is more than some people who have more confessionals. So she has Sean is only 3 minutes more than that.
Right.
Three times as many. So do you know what I'm saying? I feel like I feel like the confessional charts are important. They're very uneven. We'll see. And people on Australian Survivor Twitter are mad about it. But I do feel like this season is the most show don't tell we've ever had. Like we've had other more boring seasons, and definitely the way they've edited it, where it's like a lot of constructing Frankenbitten confessionals to kind of tell you what's going on, because they want everyone to kind of know where we're at in case we're off getting dinner. But I feel like because maybe the editing style, which I think has been better, and also because there's so much action, it's never felt like it's dragging. We get so much content in the moment. We get fun camp life. We get great statements like even Matt had at tribal council. We get fun challenge moments. So I think, and also because of this cast, everyone's like making their mark in their own way. Mm-hmm. So I think we're seeing how much more we might know someone than 18 confessionals. Cause I feel like that's not indicative of how much we know Liz.
Okay. All right, let's keep going.
Fun game. This is already great. What about Nina?
Okay, I'll set the number for Nina. Nina had, and maybe we should talk about the players also as well as we go through this.
How fun is this just creating really, the podcast on the spot?
Nina had such an interesting week that Nina had such a down week on the vote where ultimately where Sam went home, where she really, she, again, it was, the whole week was up and down. She found an idol. She did it. And it was like, okay, great. When Nina found an idol for the first time. And then she gets told and she gets brought in and Haley says, okay, here's the thing. Play it on Sam. Okay. This is the thing. George is going to go home and this is going to be a great moment. And then Nina, nobody believes her just like her mom. And then, but then she stands up and says, I'm going to play this for me.
Just like her mom played one at the final 10. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When two idols got played, to different effect.
Yeah. Her mom says, I'll play this for anybody but me. Yeah. No. But then Nina wins a challenge, and then wins the immunity challenge. So that's great. And she's right there at the final seven, and Nina, her stock is rising. I don't know if she's the winner, but she's in a much better spot coming into week seven than she was going into week six. So, her confessionals, I think she has gotten a lot, and I think she's actually very good in the confessionals also. So, I'll say that she's more than Liz. I'll say she's at 24 confessionals.
Literally was thinking the exact number, Rob, but that'd not be fun if I said same. So let's go higher, low here. That's the rules. I'll go higher. Let's say it's 26. So I'll go higher.
Yeah. Nina is great in the confessionals. I feel like she comes across very genuine. I feel like she'd be someone that's hard to frankenbite because she'll kind of like take you on her thought process. And I feel like you get to know her a lot as well. Nina has 22 confessionals. And in terms of minutes, 5 minutes and 58 seconds. So, you know, yeah, less than Liz.
I feel like, Rob, the mistake was asking for Sean's numbers. I feel like Sean's numbers messed with us here. That was a high number.
Inflated.
Yeah. Puya, what have you thought of Nina? Because I feel like that's also been a big thing. I mean, we talk about the episode 7 tribal council 100% and George and everything that he's been bringing people over. But I do feel there is always the intrigue in like Sandra's daughter being on this other Survivor show.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? Like I mentioned, there's two seasons that I don't have in my archives, in my encyclopedia. So yeah. hers happens to be one of them. And when it comes to Nina, I'm very much loving what I'm seeing. I love the idea that you get brought into the show as a hero when your mom was the villain, but you're not, you know, it's not above you to be villainous. I love that. I've enjoyed how she's kind of been, I think Rob's 100% on the money here. It started bad, right? First idol, great. Then idol gone bad. Then now, you know, you could look at it as like, okay, well, you're losing allies left and right, but she's been recruited. And I feel like that's a good spot for her to be in right now. I feel like if there's another upsetting of the apple cart, I can see Nina still being on the right side of that when that happens or if that happens. And I see a path for her. I do see a path for her. Now, do I see her winning the whole thing? I don't know, Shannon, because I don't know how – is there any validity to staying like Australia OG in that we don't want someone who's not Australian winning?
It's actually something I've not thought of since maybe Russell, because Australia hated Russell as a country. Yeah, maybe you don't accept him yourself. I don't think so with Nina. I mean, I feel like what we've seen is that she has had the relationships like now with Sean and Sam and Flick and David gone. Like that would be the spot, right? Where she comes in with like jury relationships. So, I mean, I don't think with Nina that would, I mean, it wouldn't be a thing for like me, but I can't really imagine that as much.
She has a lot of friends on the jury so far.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, isn't that like kind of like her mother? I mean, I hate to compare it to Sandra all the time, because I'm sure living in Sandra's shadow as a Survivor player now is its own thing. But these are the parts of Nina's game that I'm enjoying is that scrappiness that we're seeing now. I mean, before she was kind of like in these majorities, in these groups, she almost pulled off the blind side of Haley. But now I think we're seeing what Sandra did well in her two winning seasons. You know, she rallied after losses, after friends got voted out like that. You know, she was scrappy. She's like throwing Simon under the bus. She comes, there's a secret scene. She's like, well, I don't care. I'm going to throw him under the bus, even though he was flipping to be with her. We see that on the show as well. So there are parts of that. And then just doing what you can to make those relationships and connections. So if we see it, I think we would see it in like a Sandra Wynn kind of vein, wouldn't we? Like the longevity of that.
That being said, though, it did seem like that she did. And I said that she was going into this week in a better spot than she was last week. However, she was kind of framed at that last vote. So she, like on her own action, she did well, but George walks out of that last tribal council like, Nina, that idiot, can't believe it. Like, Haley, can you believe some people around here? She's like, he's like, I knew it. I have such a good read. She's like, oh, you of course you do, George. Does George walk out of that tribal council of like, okay, I got to fix Nina now. I thought I could trust her. And now Nina has to be the next person to go at 7. Like, I could see where George erroneously is going for Nina at the next tribal council.
Yeah, that is true. And that could be it. What I'm hoping for, like, the majority of this tribe, for their sake, for their games, and for Haley, is that she's using that to take out George.
Yes.
So, like, I think Nina has been an asset to George that he's invested in, and I think that she's gone with that as well. But I think if Haley is intentionally driving that divide, Nina feels put out by George, feels on the outs by George, and feels that separation, Haley pulls her over, even though there's been... That's what I'm concerned about. I don't know if Haley can do it, because I think there's been such a separation in their games. Nina literally tried to vote Haley out, and we see how much that played out in the first tribal council of this week, that lack of trust. But if it's pulling Nina over, let her be the target for George. Let that be the focus. Let that be the scapegoat. And then we'll come while he's distracted by that. And we'll use her to get rid of George. Like, that could be the play.
You know, it hasn't really been talked about on the show, but I am curious. Of course, you know, Nina knows her mom's legacy and ultimately knows the story of the original Heroes versus Villains so well.
She did say that Sandra had played 5 or 6 times.
I think that the Island of the Idols.
I agree with you.
That is a good question. So, she knows that legacy. She knows that story. And she knows, how did my mom win Heroes versus Villains? She sat next to Russell, that everybody hated. And Nina does seem to, I feel like, have warm feelings towards George. Like, she has never been a person to be like, you know what, screw George. She's almost like, you got to give the guy his credit. You got to give him his credit. Does she see her path to victory potentially being the person with the most friends, who sits next to the person with the most enemies at the end of the game, and exactly like her mom in this season with the same name?
Chills. I can't. No. I mean, really? I think that would be a mistake, though, because George isn't Russell, as we've spoken about.
George isn't Russell, but for Nina, if you're out there...
If she's drawing parallels, yeah.
She wants it for the poetry of Australian Survivor Twitter.
No, I don't think for the poetry of the...
What would be poetic?
But I wonder if she's if she is looking at, like, what is my path to victory, and knowing that story, is that possible that she sees herself as potentially going to the end with George?
See, my thing is that Nina's not really the Sandra. Like, Sandra's been compared more to, like, the Haley. Haley was giving the information that wasn't believed. Haley's the winner. It's like, which one is Sandra, the twine or the winner that came onto the season? I don't think that's Nina's path, because I think she'd beat almost anyone but George. If there are relationships there, she'd be in a really good spot. But George, I feel like, has this locked down from a jury perspective, and that's all we hear. She says it. Everyone says it. They, again, could be gameplay, but they're all saying it. I think Nina's more in, like, the hero spot, why they so badly wanted to take out Rupert, Colby, people who we hadn't, you know, necessarily seen as playing as much a dominant game, but we're going to have these hero allies on the jury. I don't know that there was really a George who hadn't pissed off as many people as someone like Russell, but had dominated the game, who was, like, a bigger threat. So I think that Nina needs to be, so it's not a perfect parallel, but I think that she needs to be in the spot of sitting next to everyone but the person that everyone's saying would win, and then relying on those relationships, much like the heroes did once upon a time, not her mother.
Shannon, who do you want to talk about next in terms of how much we've seen them in the edit?
Loving the game. Yes. All right. Let's see. I don't know I'm going randomly, obviously. Let's do Simon. Talk about Simon.
All right, well, starting with Simon, I thought this was very interesting. Okay, of course, he had a big episode in episode 18, and we saw sort of, again, in true Simon fashion this season, the highs and the lows.
Mostly
there was mention of the car curse in this episode, and he did win the car. Shannon, how much of a thing is the car curse in Australian Survivor?
Well, it exists in Australian Survivor. The car curse has kind of been broken globally. Not that Simon might have known that based on what was airing at the time. But yeah, in Australian Survivor, it exists. In US Survivor, it exists. And, like, that was a cute fandom moment, I felt, for Simon to call that out on the show. And it was amazing that he won a car. I think that was the main high. Being left out of all the votes, flipping to a minority, being again, punching bag of the season. Not as much, but I'm really happy that he got a car out of this. He deserves it. Can he trade in that car for like the emotional damages that he's going to need help
with? He had a good run that I really thought that there was a shot where I kind of thought he was making it through that tribal council in episode 18. And I just felt like that Simon has had like some degree of like main character energy, obviously not compared to George, but he's been so at the center of everything. And I do feel like that in a lot of ways, this season was his story. And I kind of was like in the back of my mind thinking like, okay, you know, if George goes out and then, you know, Haley, you know, wants to keep him around. I do feel like that he has a shot at this thing.
Yeah, I would, if I may put a comparison out there, see if it fits. I'll throw it on, see if it fits. Okay. Simon is kind of the Jon Snow. Yes, in the story to me.
Yeah.
I mean, right? I need the comparisons to be heroes versus villains related because I'm mature. I know. I mean, I've seen Game of Thrones. Don't cancel me.
Yeah. Where, you know, like you said, main character energy, but never quite center stage and still is vital to the story. But you meet him, you're like, okay, he's going to be a big part of it. Then he kind of gets thrown to the wayside, kind of gets thrown over to the Night's Watch, if you will, aka the bottom of the pile. And slowly but surely, other people may be disappearing. He's still there, and maybe he gets to take a shot when he may. But it's been wild to me because Simon's also someone I've not met before, so it's my first time watching him. And to watch him just be on the struggle bus for so long and then still be here and still be talked about episode 18 is nuts. I've kind of written him off about, 10 episodes ago? Like, it's been a minute. So to still have him be here, and I do think in a very wild way, if he finds his way to the final two, outside of being next to a George, I think he can make his way for a win, maybe.
If we were drafting the players in the game, okay.
We're going to do that too now.
We're going to do that too? Okay. I think I would go George 1, Haley 2, and Simon 3 for the winner.
Well, I have some news on this that I worked out that I just found right before the podcast. Yes. There were some outlets that were out at Jury Villa talking to the players, and they put out interviews with them from Jury Villa. And people feel warmly towards Simon of the jurors that are there, warmer than you'd think, kind of rooting for him in the same way you would root for a puppy. And I guess it makes sense. We keep calling him a puppy, so like people like him.
He's
that makes sense.
He's not mean-spirited. I don't think he said a bad word about anybody in the season.
Probably
outside
George,
of George.
But the person that
you other people would say mean-spirited things about, and the person that you know is saying mean-spirited things about other people. So like I think that he really does have very much like underdog energy, and if he gets to the end, you know, like it may be in a way that Owen in US Survivor was not able to like really sell the jury on, of like, you know, I never stopped trying. And that was an interesting conversation that got brought up at that episode 18 tribal council.
Yeah. I mean, how can you not feel for him when he wins the car and he's like, this is more than I earn. I mean, that I think is a really beautiful moment. So yeah, I mean, I'd love to see it, but I agree. Like it can't be his story as much. The narrative is, I think, already one of the best narratives in Global Survivor history, but he's not controlling things. So like the things that are happening around him, separate to him, it's like he's got this plan with George and then they vote out Shawnee, and he's like, that is so different to what I was doing. But he has these side quests, and because he's Simon and he's still a hugely important character, the side quests are important. So yeah, oh, he's been so much fun.
Okay, but now we have to give a number of his confessionals.
What are we up to? I feel like Jordan Kalish, all the numbers and the math, it's difficult.
34.
I'm going to take the over, and I'm going to take the way over.
How much over, Rob? Give me a number.
I mean, if Sean had, 54?
Sean had 52.
52. I feel like that. I'll say Simon is at like 60.
Simon has 75 confessionals.
Ooh,
and
cooking.
In terms of time, 19 minutes and 8 seconds.
Damn, that's bodying Sean.
Huge character, yeah. Like,
yeah.
I'm telling you, there's no, I shouldn't have given you Sean because there's no objective metric for these charts.
Yeah, but like, Simon has just been at the center of every, you know, he was in the storyline in the beginning of the season in the villains and going head to head with George and everything that was going on there. And, you know, Jordy like going behind his back. And then he went to the supervillains and then he had everything with the cookie idol and everything that was going on there. And then he's been such a focus like at the merge also and what he's thinking and everybody's going to dupe him and whether or not he would go back. So he has been very much like at the center of everything and has like really like has not had any port in the storm, has just been sort of just blown all over the place, but he's still there.
Mm-hmm. The big thing for me is that whether he has been in the majority, he's been the focal point. When he's been in the minority, he's been in the focal point. In this merge stage, he's kind of been alone. So it's like we're getting, all right, here's what the Spice Girls are figuring out. Here's what the heroes are doing. And Simon's also here, but then Simon gets to funnel all that Team Simon on himself while everyone's splitting the hero confessionals and the villain confessionals. So it kind of makes sense now that we're talking about it. This is one of the weakest games for me of anything, is guessing numbers like this. So
I feel bad, Via. I feel like I gave it a bit away with my reaction. Oh, someone's keeping score. Okay, great. Yes. You're on two, Rob. And okay, great. So yes. Someone's doing that.
I'm on the scoreboard. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yes. Yeah, no, I gave that away. I need to get my face better. But I will say with Simon and George, the dynamic I think of, and with more separation because the other people work together more, but like Tony and Spencer, like I don't know if I've spoken about this, but do we get it like Tony's controlling everything, the big George character, and then it's like Spencer was the underdog who would like feel everything to 1,000, the highs, the lows, you feel it with him, and they had this like cat and mouse kind of dynamic with, again, more collaboration probably other than the merge vigilante stuff, which was so enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like that's the closest comparison.
I can see George calling him the young lad, Simon.
Yeah, he calls himself the old boys. He's like, he's younger than Simon, but maybe an old soul. Mm-hmm. All right, who else? What do we want to do? Should we go with Matt?
Okay, this is I'm setting the number here on Matt.
Yes,
Matt confessionals. It's going to be low.
Yes,
and so I am going to say that Matt has 11 confessionals this season.
I was going to say, if Liz is sitting at 18, he has no business getting more than 18. 11 is a good number. I'll take the over because it could be a little bit more here, but I'll go with that. Yeah, Matt's kind of just been there for me. Like, I know that I think Shannon, first of all, is so good at this because she's giving everyone their flowers, giving them some stake in here. Whereas I'm coming, I'm like, is there steak to be had here? Or
that's
just
like the least from Matt, probably. Like, Jerry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I still think, you never know. If it's a final two, they go to a final three with George. I definitely see the pathway. Mm. Let alone
14.
Well, you don't have to give enough.
Well, okay. I know, but you're saying higher. You're saying higher.
Higher.
So Matt has 19, more than
that
Liz.
Is one criminal.
More than Liz. So that's, were you sure it was 2-1? Well, it's 2-all now.
Yes.
Okay. And in time, so Liz on 18 had 7 minutes and 32 seconds. Matt on 19 has 3 minutes, 56 seconds. Yeah. So again,
the thing that I do find entertaining about him is that he flipped against the heroes like for no reason and flipped like so hard against them, like almost like Natalie Bolton levels of that he just like despises them and wants to like floss his teeth with their jugulars for no reason. They did literally nothing to this man, right?
Yeah, well, he's like, I think they're a bad influence on him. Like, he's like being peer pressured. Yeah, I mean, he's the one who, like, that's what the worry we've had with him for a jury is, like, who can blame Jerry or Haley? They voted out those people, tried to, non-limbs, you know, or Jerry was a split every time. Simon, who can blame Simon? But Matt, it kind of feels like that from the exits, they were surprised by that. They were like, we were throwing challenges to like help them, but he didn't come over. So it is interesting because when we talked about like Stevie versus Matt to be kept by George, we thought, well, Stevie's so loyal. And I believe that to be true. It's like, well, Matt could be, maybe he will be loyal. And then he really was, like, he stuck with them. And the amount of loyalty he's shown since is Stevie-esque. Like, they're coming to him at rewards. He's like, no, they're targeting him for being such a closed book, for how much of like an asset he's been to George. He only wants to work
with George and Jerry.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that loyalty is immense.
Maybe he's a huge Seinfeld fan. Have people talked about
George
that?
And Jerry, yeah.
He just wants to go to the diner with George and Jerry.
So is he Elaine or Kramer?
He's Kramer. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. So, okay. Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
Too old. That's all we have on that. Much like the confessional chats. Not as much. Well, he has more than we think. What? Okay. Should we do? So we've got who we have? We have Jerry, Haley, and George. Let's end on Haley and George. Let's do Jerry.
Okay. Jerry's interesting because I feel like we've gotten a lot from him. I mean, significantly more than Matt, I would say. And Jerry was a big part of the initial defecting on the show. I feel like he's been a lot more quiet now that we've gone to this portion of the game. So I would give him like a cheeky 25.
Yeah, that's a pretty good number for Jerry. What is a cheeky 25?
It's like a 24, but a little more, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I am going to say higher, and I'm going to say that I think that the Jerry number might be a little inflated over that there was like a whole like Jerry storyline in the season. So he's going to have like his regular like one or two an episode, but then at the time where he was like sent to go and be the spy, he probably like got a bump for like, you know, three or four in those episodes. So I'll say higher than 25, but I think it's close.
He did get content over that time. He did get a bump around that and definitely around the swap. But no, Jerry has the fewest confessionals in the game. He has 16 confessionals. Oh. And he has had two confessionals in the last nine episodes. Well, yeah, I better help with that. I'm really Jordan Kalishing this.
3-2.
So the last nine episodes, 4-0s, a 2, and 4-0s again. So that, you know,
he's
after we got a lot of that
quiet
content.
Post-merge.
Yeah, but then again, you know, Matt has more, but then Jerry has 5 minutes and 26 seconds, a minute and a half more. So it's again about, because I think like it also is like when do we get them? Like we got to know Jerry. He was a big part of how we understood the hero's dynamics, then the swap. And now like we know where he sits. He's with George. Do we need to hear about it? Like we know what's going on with Jerry.
You know? Also, Shannon, it's a long game. Jerry's 62, like he could also be fading. You know, these people sometimes like they have like a ton of energy or like, you know, more energy and they're more like lively in the confessionals. And that's also a thing in these long seasons.
I mean, you say that's like me on any given day. Like, like you know, it's amazing how well he's done. So yeah, he has the,
you know, Butch wasn't the same guy on day 37 that he was on day one.
Yeah, Jerry has less than Stevie. Stevie had 17. Ben had 17. And I do think he's been, like, he's obviously been quite important to George. But we do see an Australian Survivor, and this is a big thing with Liz as well, is that if you pair up with a bigger character, Australian Survivor will go to the confessional for the bigger character, like, 100% of the time. They won't be like, oh, that's 70-30 that. They're like, they want to hear from Shawnee over Liz. That was probably what really doomed Liz's confessionals. Like, they're going to go to Shawnee unless they're separated by a tribe swap, you know? So that's an important thing. Mm-hmm. All right. Should we go to our king and queen? Should we do Haley and then
King
George?
And queen set up for a big showdown next week.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do Haley.
Okay, so it's my turn to set the number for Haley. And
fun game we've had.
Okay.
It's coming down to the wire too. Yeah, what a fun and exciting game.
It's everything Australian Survivor is coming up aces in 2023. I will say, and I'll give you my number and then we could talk through my reasoning.
No pressure, but you do need to get this to be in the game. Soon,
yes. So. Okay. I will say that the number for Haley is 38.
I don't think that's enough. I don't, but also I'm not good at this and I'm in the lead. So it's pressure. And I feel like, you're in such a good spot, Rob, because with George, whatever I say, you can say higher and probably get it. It's tough. All right. You said 35?
I said 38.
38. Ooh, okay. Okay. So yeah, I mean, Haley has had a very interesting journey from the beginning. There's a lot of eyes on her and a lot of content on her. Coming in as a returning winner, trying to go 2-for-2 here, but also every time George was trying to get information funneled over to the heroes, it was through Haley. So every time George got a confessional, Haley got a confessional. And then Haley has been a part of a lot of the plans to defect, to do this, to do that, then does the flip. I think it's more. I'm just going to go more here. It has to be more. I'll be floored if it isn't more.
Yes, Puya, you have won the game, which is fun. Yeah, Haley has 55 confessionals. In the Rogue boot alone, she got 13 confessionals. In the last episode, she got 10. Australian Survivor will also do that.
Confessionals in the Rogue boot.
Australian Survivor will do like zero confessionals for someone for 12 episodes and then give them like 14 confessionals.
I was undercounting the pre-merge. I felt like that she did not have a ton going on there. I felt like there were times where she was very quiet in the beginning of the game.
There were four zeros. Yeah, there were. I mean, well, no, yeah. So there, she did, and there, it, but that's what it was. And she would get a spike. She's had a couple of spikes. In minutes, she is on 11 minutes and 59 seconds. So it there's a lot there as well. I think, yeah, maybe because it's been kind of in that subtlety, it gets a little missed, like how much she's been a part of everything. I think the Haley factor for me is interesting because I've been talking to some people who are watching, some like family members who, like Puya, maybe didn't see her season. And I think if it's such a different game to her first game, it's so much more subtle than her first game. And Haley comes across like a very subtle person. She speaks so calmly. She's like this really considered person. She played a huge game her first time around. And I think if you know her and know that, you're probably looking out for it a little more than that. And if you don't, maybe she does slip under the radar a little bit, even in our estimations as an audience.
Okay. So for Haley, now she has the, you know, big move this week. Okay. And I guess, I don't know, has this been talked about sort of like shades of Natalie Anderson in that the...
So much Natalie Anderson. So much Natalie Anderson. The revenge and the changing of the split.
The changing of the vote to Alec Christie instead of Keith Nail so that she could work with Keith Nail. And so with this final seven now, we have Jerry and Matt who are not going to flip against George. So she needs to like sort of like get the like four of a kind here of that. Can she get for the, at the next vote herself, Nina, Liz, and Simon all to vote the same way? Feels doable. Yeah. It feels doable.
It does.
I'm not sold on Nina. That's the one for me. I think it's going to come down to how this fracture manifests. And if that's it, if she can get Nina over for that, then that is like an underratedly incredible move, I feel. Because I just feel like George has put so much work into Nina. If she can undo that, I think that's massive. I don't know where Nina will go. I'm worried about the Nina-Haley relationship, given that what it is we saw very little between them. Then she tries to blindside Haley. Yep. Then Haley flips on them, gives her information. It's not believed. Where are we going with this? You know?
So there was talk on this very podcast, Shannon. You mentioned that, you know, some people see Haley as the Sandra. Then we've got the actual Twine as the Sandra. And then Rob mentioned that potentially, you know, seeing George as the Russell. Is there a world where Nina sees shades of her own mom in Haley? And that's why she's like, I can't let her get far because she could win twice. And I don't want that. I don't think that's a good choice. Oh, I mean, she did. Yeah.
So I would say I do not think that she looks at Haley like her mom, with the exception until you said 2-time winner. And could
that's
Sandra
the main
said,
one.
Like, listen,
100%
baby girl. You know, I don't know how Sandra talks to Nina. nobody. You don't let anybody win
wrong.
Twice.
Yeah.
This is it. This is a revelation. I love Sandra with my whole heart, but I've also seen her go out and be like, oh, I'm going to vote out all the women because I don't want another queen. I'd rather have a king than a queen. She's protective over the title and Haley is our Australian Survivor queen. So yeah, I kind of feel like if Sandra knew Haley was playing, she'd be like, Nina, whatever you do, you're not letting Haley get even near the end.
Yes.
And maybe that's why she tried to blindside her.
I don't think she sees the poetry there. I think that she does that, but Haley is going to win twice. No, not on my watch.
Yeah. We need to keep that winner pool down. Another winner. winning again in a field of not all winners.
Yes.
No, we do that once globally, ever. It was improbable the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might have a point. I'm not even joking, but I don't know that Nina's going to follow it, but I think that Sandra might have said it.
Nina tried earlier in the season to execute that Haley ouster, mm-hmm. and Haley got saved by the mutiny. And then, you know, didn't ultimately listen when Haley tried to save her. And we talk about the Haley and Nina relationship. Let's not forget what Nina said when she cast her vote for Simon. I can't have you here anymore. That you are like a bad penny. That every time I've tried to work with you, it has not worked. Go home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a concern as well. Keeping Simon as someone that people won't want to work with. My concern on that has been Liz, because Sean said like Liz was going for Simon at 8. You know, she doesn't want to work with Simon. We've seen the fractures there socially. So, yeah.
And I mean, you look at Nina's voting track record here since we have merged, right? Votes wrong. Votes wrong. Votes wrong. The minute she is in bed with George's side is on the right side of the vote. That must feel nice. That high of like, yeah, you're cursed. I can't trust you. You're leading me down the wrong path. Oh, this worked. You Goldilocks, we have found it. You are the one. Let's go with you because at least I'm getting something right here. And that high, you want to chase that high moving forward, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, Haley did try her very best, to be fair.
She did give her everything outside of just like being like, all right, let me just play it for you. Just give me
the item.
Haley's done a great job of playing a very, very subtle game. And it's been impressive to watch. And her fortunes have been rising here in the post-merge game. And she has Simon in her pocket potentially right now. So I can't wait to see what she's going to do next. Let's talk about the elephant in every Australian Survivor room, and that is none other than George, the king of
Bankstown.
Who's
setting the number here? Well, the mayor of Bankstown. There's a mayor of Bankstown. That's not George.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you setting the number, Rob?
Puyo was supposed to set the number, but he's already won the game. This is just for fun.
For fun.
But it is fun.
What's the highest number we've had so far, Shannon?
Simon.
So Simon, as it's 75 in terms of timing. Yeah, it's also Simon, 19 minutes and 8 seconds. And then drops. I mean, after that was Shawnee. Shawnee, 12 minutes and 32 seconds. Shawnee was on 58. And then Haley. So that, yeah.
By the way, 99 David problems, and they're all confessionals. I'm going 99. I'm going 99 on. Yeah, 99. Give me 99.
I do wonder if perhaps the number of confessionals might not be as long, but the length. Because George can monologue.
He'll get on there and
I can't believe the audacity that they could think, and he'll be like just like going for like 2 minutes. So perhaps I'm gonna, just for fun, I'm gonna say lower than 99, but I'm gonna say that his minutes are double like the second place person.
Well, Rob, you are wrong on both counts.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm sorry. Puyo, you really smashed it. George is on 113 confessionals.
Nice.
And 31 minutes and 56 seconds. So not double, but it is over 12 minutes more than Simon. So you have to combine Simon and Shawnee, the next two people, to get one George.
It's not enough. It's not enough.
You're going to get canceled by Twitter. You'll never see it.
Why?
It's
Twitter doesn't want George to have more confessionals?
Yes, Rob, you are so envy you.
Hey, guess what? Unlike Liz, they don't know.
The counter T-shirt, I love it.
I mean, I think people in general don't love a confessional chart where two confessionals for David Zaharakis, 113 for George. David Zaharakis, 22 seconds. George's, you know, 31 minutes and 56 seconds. He has an entire half-hour episode dedicated to just his confessionals. Look, but
we're trying to make an entertaining show. And George, love him or hate him, and a lot of people love to hate him, is a very entertaining figure. And so he gets a lot of confessionals.
Yeah. No, I think it's been entertaining. I think some people, I mean, they were upset about Shawnee. I think it could always be a little bit more even, a little more respectful. You can always go once to the beta. Instead of 10 out of 10 times to the alpha over the beta, we do 8 and 2. You know, I don't think it needs to be like this fully equitable thing, mm-hmm. but I do think we could, you know, we can make it a little, we can make it more even. I do think that entertainment needs to be the first priority. And I think that as long as for me, I know the characters, as long as I'm getting the content, as long as I'm entertained, and as long as I'm not ruling out viable winner contenders, which has happened multiple times, and not having winner edits telegraphed mm-hmm. to me and shoved down my throat, I can't complain that much. So, and I think that is true of this season, but it is interesting because you look at the confessional charts and they are like Jerry has 16, George has 113. That's the scope of the people that are still in the game. And that is quite a large gap, but I feel like I have a good sense of everyone for where they stand in the season. And can we say that George hasn't had that impact on the season, that it feels unearned? Because it's exactly where we're at with the Chizzy charts. I'll say that as well.
Look, this has been a wonderful season of television. Like, can we enjoy it? Like, and look, and I complain all the
really,
time.
Are really, really away from Twitter?
Can I complain? Or, I mean, I guess that, and I get like sort of like, oh, I'm the guy that always complains about US Survivor. And, you know, I there are things that I don't like about it, but I feel like that when we have things that we do like, you know, we could talk about how much we like them.
Yeah. I think that's sound logic.
I will say though, I did feel Ooh. Like that. I wonder if I don't want to be a hypocrite here because I have been like on the Australian Survivor podcast talking about how, hey, I don't mind it if you're going to give George 113 confessionals. And through two episodes of Survivor 44, not to do too many spoilers here, but I feel like that that it does seem like that maybe the US Survivor editors are going to maybe like course correct
George themselves.
Yeah.
Instead of gorging yourself, they're going to George themselves. And that's when the confessional chart might lean in one particular direction.
Where I do feel like that at the dawn of the new era, I think that they did seemingly like try to make a conscious attempt, and with the exception of Heather, of like, hey, we're going to try to give everybody, give everybody something. And I do wonder if maybe if that here by the time we get to Survivor 44, if they're a little bit back to like, we're just going to play the hits.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes you have a character that
only
kind of demands
hours.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there's probably like a George-like character on 44 that's demanding it. I'd love your just your takes on the question of the week, which was you weren't on Twitter, but a lot of questions on if this was the right timing for George to take out Shawnee. Tony liked, obviously we do hear Shawnee say, she's coming from at 8, but people were still not on board with that. So I just love each of your takes on if you thought the timing was good there.
Priya, did you have a strong thought on this?
Yes, I think it was the wrong time. I really do. And ultimately, my whole time watching this show is that, George is playing phenomenal. Everyone and their grandmothers know he's playing phenomenal, which to me always makes me feel skeptical that he can nail the landing because someone's going to get you ultimately. Someone's just gonna. So for me, I feel like looking at the two of them, like, what is the shiz? I'm not a part of that. One of you got to go. That's it. That end of discussion. You're done. I feel like if he gets to 5 with Spice Girls, aka the Shiz and himself, and Jerry and Matt, he has it. He has Jerry and Matt who are with him.
Yeah.
He can get rid of them then, and he's still going to coast fine. Whereas here, I feel like you've kind of made the wheel wobbly enough that you could see some other stuff happen. And I can see that happening moving forward. And again, like I said before, a crack is fun, but not that crack. Because if anyone was gonna end up usurping, I wanted it to be Shawnee. So I'm upset about that.
Yeah. I feel like that, how could you say it's too early? Where unless you are looking at through, you know, Shawnee superfan glasses, and then you say, you idiot, why could you do that?
Oh, so you are on Twitter?
How could you say it? Like, and again, I listened to your podcast with Zach, where you talked about how Shawnee said that, I was going to get George at the final 8. And so, okay, well, she's going to be coming for him. I mean, things were, this was a great, George moved forward in a great spot. And really, I do think that had he been able to keep Sean in the game, I think that that would have been like game over for everybody, where then it looked like that he had Sean as a chess piece also. And so I think there's a lot of intrigue about like, you know, can George be stopped now where maybe there wasn't, but I think it was the right move, clearly, because that the threats that are to George would only be exacerbated by having Shawnee still in the game. So that would have been another thing for him to be worried about, and that she's gone and Liz is not doing anything. And so for George, it seems like a threat neutralized.
Yeah, I think that getting to five with Matt and Jerry and the Spice Girls, like, I don't, like, that would have been an incredible spot. I don't think that's by accident. I think that that was intentionally set up that way and how he's created those options. But I just think that he saw that it became unavailable to him. So he was now choosing between two much, much worse options. Like, you want scary Shawnee in the game when you think she's not letting you get to five, and we know she wasn't, and that reads correct.
I thought George was scary Spice.
Well, that's it. I mean, yeah, I don't really know what happened with the dissolution of the Spice Girls in real life, but with it happening here, I put him on what should have been a trickier path, but then he makes it work. And then it is interesting what you say about him keeping Sean and not happening here. There is something fun about George putting in all this work and then Haley just like slightly a step behind him, like just undoing the knots, like, you know, and with the work with Sean, he's not pulling in Sean. Sean comes back desperate, needing him. He's kept Sean in for that to take out Shawnee. And then like Haley takes him out. Is that going to be true of Nina? Like the work he's done with Nina, and Haley's erasing it behind him as he's like writing the words on the board. So that's the question mark for me, more just on the blind spot that he has with Haley is my biggest thing. But mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't have a blind spot with Shawnee. And I think that's probably to his benefit as much as a lot of Twitter does disagree.
And Shawnee is great. And, you know, she was a big character, especially in the pre-merge of the season. And, you know, hope that she gets to be the first four-time player.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say you might go back and watch Brains versus Brawn. I've been recommending that to a lot of people this week. And I think that it might even be a more enjoyable season, kind of knowing how it ends and really coming in knowing these characters, because you'll be looking for those characters and you're going to get a lot of them. And especially if you have a bit of like the not a trigger warning, but a little bit of like a content warning on the fact that you're going to need to strap in for the ride a little bit of the time, like might soften that landing. And I think people would really enjoy that. And I would highly recommend to anyone who hasn't seen Brains versus Brawn, but is watching this
off-season
season, like
book club, Shannon.
I thought I was getting a break, but let's do it. Mm-hmm. I love this podcast / production meeting that we've had, Rob. It's been a great time with the three of us. Yeah. Okay.
Can I share with you a Twitter? I know that we talked about how I'm not on Twitter, and I certainly have been on Twitter less in the last few months than I have been in some years past. But, you know, longtime listener, the great David Healy
wrote a
Twitter thread and sent it to me to show some of the similarities he's found between the OG Heroes versus Villains and the Australian Survivor Heroes versus Villains. And I'd love to share that with our listeners.
Brilliant.
Okay. So David Healy writes on March 6th, "The more I watch Heroes versus Villains for Survivor AU, I keep finding similarities with our version of Heroes versus Villains on Survivor. This is a thread of all the comparisons I've seen from the two franchises' best seasons." Okay. Number one, both seasons start out with injuries in a challenge on the first episode. One man and one woman, both from the same tribe. Fortunately, three of the four were able to continue playing the game despite the injury. Okay. All right. That might be the weakest one. Okay.
I mean, I think it's interesting. Like I said it at the time, like the challenge injuries. And I also think I hadn't even thought of is the fact that both will probably be considered the best of their franchise is.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, that part very true. Okay. But Puya, it gets better. Okay.
I'm strapped in, ready to go.
Right. Okay. All right.
Why am I just looking at this toe video over and over? Scroll down.
All right. Next, both villains' tribes have larger than life personality man who quickly forms an alliance with two of the younger women. Despite their small alliance being initially outnumbered, they gain traction in the tribe and find many idols. Okay.
Okay.
All right. It gets better. Puya's skeptical. Okay. All right. Listen. No. How about this? The aforementioned big personality male has a hat in the game, but both hats are burned by their nemesis. One very early in the game, one very late in the game.
Let him cook, Rob. Let him cook. We're on to something.
Okay. Then, when it's time for the scrappy villain alliance of three to recruit a fourth member, they bring in Jerry. That's good, right?
That is very good. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
And but there's something there as well, because I think that Jerry ended up showing like an elevated loyalty to Russell of the three at times, definitely like in the Danielle boot. And we've seen Jerry be so loyal to George as well. So damn, something's going on. Something's going on with the Survivor gods with this. Something weird is happening.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Shortly before it's time for the tribes to merge, the hero's tribe decides to pass along an immunity idol to someone on the villain's tribe after an immunity challenge. Okay. Happened on both the shows. Then we also have regarding that at the merge, a pivotal conversation takes place where one of the hero women tries lying to a villain woman, but the villain can read their face and knows that they're being lied to. Of course, we remember with Parvati and Amanda.
Wait, a villain? Which one are they referring? There's been so much information passed. Because I would think that that was more like David and Liz, in terms of telling her like where to play the idol. But they're talking about one of the hero women. Oh, they're talking about Flick. Sorry. Okay. I needed more. Yeah.
Okay. I needed the explanation too, Shannon. Okay.
Yeah.
Not only do both versions have a twine, but both twines end up finding their first idol in the game. And yes, the idol ends up in both of their bras. Okay. It's a family tradition passed down. Then a previous winner reaches out to the heroes with some intel that might save their games. Unfortunately, the heroes don't trust her. In both instances, the biggest skeptic is the one that goes home.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Here's Rupert. And of course, that happened to Sam this past week. A few votes into the merge, the big personality male realizes that the two women in his core alliance are closer with each other. In both versions, he decides to prematurely break up the alliance, sending one of the women home.
We have seen this.
Mm-hmm. Yep. People are adding their own.
Yeah, there was one that you had that wasn't included, the Jordy Tyson comparison, the yes. Joker going home by his own hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something there.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting, and I'm sure that we'll discover more. Thank you, David Healy.
Yeah. They manifested something when they put a twine in Samoa for your heroes versus villains season, because no one is doing this on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right. Here's the Australia. Is this thing on? Second chance next, please, Australia. Sounds like you're cooking up there. Do second chance next, please.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Something really fun. Who do I want the Jeremy treatment to happen to?
Mm-hmm.
Nick will have to come back as a Steven. He's already had two chances. We'll have to do a third chance. There's not enough players who haven't already had a second chance. The returnees come back like anything here. Like, it's mm-hmm. been a lot of opportunity. But yeah, it's been fun. I think this was a great time talking it through.
Yeah, fun way to get into all this.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Anything else that we want to cover on the week in Australian Survivor?
Rob, how'd you like that KFC, Rob? Were you into it?
It looked very good. You know, I'm not a big KFC guy, but I loved seeing George get his reward, and that was very fun to see it take place. And I'm happy that George got to eat his chicken. How about this? When we get together, okay, in a week from now, all right, is there any possibility? Like, what's the possibility that George and Haley are still active players in the show after this next week of Australian Survivor? Only two episodes.
Well, it's the final seven, and there's often him not only at the final seven.
I was going to say, it's pretty good. Pretty good.
For that. But yeah, I mean, I see it as them coming for each other now. I don't see how they don't. How can Haley not? There's so much information that will come back on her. Like, she really needs to just, like, get
but
out
George
of
George
a cannon.
George doesn't know.
Mm-hmm. We have that to hold on to right now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but she told Matt about the 60K, and it's just a lot of there's a lot of information.
He did plant that seed of like, if anyone comes back to me with that, I know Haley did it, and that's like the ticking time bomb here.
Ultimately, George didn't have such a great week. I mean, that he basically, of the three episodes this week, that there was really, he should have gone home on the first episode of the week. That if it was not for the blunders of the original heroes, like all misplaying their idols, George should have gone home at that tribal council. He got the one, he got maybe his last hurrah with the Shawnee vote.
What a big hurrah. That's hurrah. a huge hurrah. That's like an all-time blindside on one of the best players.
By Haley at the third episode of the week. So of the three episodes this week, he had one huge swing, but then two tribal councils he was not completely the, you know, great master manipulator and puppet master who knows what everybody is doing. And also, he is under the impression of that everything went according to plan, all three tribal councils. Like, there is a...
Well, just Nina.
Right, but he doesn't know what happened. He doesn't know that Haley was plotting against him. And so there is, like, a information deficit that he is in right now that he doesn't know, and that is dangerous.
Yeah. And that information deficit is largely Haley. I think the listing is an issue, but that when you're talking about that, the first tribal council, he almost goes home. The third tribal council, he doesn't get his way. Why? One word, Haley. And that's why I struggled with the Chizzy points, to be like, should Haley be getting three here for outplaying George on the read, for asserting her agency and her will above him 2 out of 3 times? And the reason I went with George for three was I just thought, you know, the Shawnee blind side, we talk about Ozzy, you know, Sophie, like some of the all time blindsides with an idol that we've seen, and to do it on some of the best players, on someone like Sophie, Shawnee, those were similar votes to me. I just felt like that was like, that's high enough for me, that is like, that's incredible. But I do think there is that hole, and more than he's had to this point, for sure.
It's so interesting because I think that George is just so far out in front, and he does have like a couple of like rock solid numbers locked in with Jerry and Matt. But I feel like that Haley does have like this trajectory that she is on, and she's rising at the right time. And it just is a matter of, are there still numbers in the game for her to be able to do what she needs to do? Because she's the person that has the most information, and she's the person who like knows where all the bodies are buried. And so if she's able to do something with that, and I don't know, maybe there's an advantage that comes into play, and then she can do something with it. I just think that she has a really unique opportunity that I don't see anybody else in the game having to unseat the king.
Yeah, I think with George, like, it will that all catch up with him? I mean, I still think there was other good stuff here. It's not just the Shawnee boot. Like, he reads, am I going to come back to, like, a disparate group if Shawnee goes? He's right. Yes. He maintains it. The read of Simon to begin with. Like, not that it wasn't obvious, but, like, I thought that was good.
That was incredible. Yeah.
I loved how he put the test out so casually. And then when Simon said, I'd like to be on the Nina vote, he, like, unflinching, but it's just like, gotcha. I think that was really fun. So I think there was a lot of good stuff. I think there was a lot of good stuff. It's just the Haley issue. And Haley is, you know, one of the best players of all time. So that's why you'll love Brains versus Braun. Like, watch these two forces of the game for, yeah. So anyway, I'm excited about our book club.
All right. Shannon, I know you have the US Survivor Global coming up. Who are you talking to this week?
Lisa Stanger, great Survivor winner from Survivor New Zealand. Really excited to talk about it with her because she's obviously such a super fan. Once upon a time, one Survivor in a wrap t-shirt. We don't talk about it enough that happened.
We don't talk about it enough. Okay.
It was amazing. So yeah, very excited about that. And yes, follow me at Shannon Gates, unless you're muting me, blocking me, whatever. Rob doesn't even see my tweets. They're not even an issue to him, even though I'm constantly tweeting about the show. But yeah, I'm putting out all that content. Talking Tribal, recaps, check-ins, exits, Survivor Global. I think that's it.
Did I complain enough about US Survivor on this podcast, Shannon?
Or no, we did a different format.
Will you cover it for me on the Survivor Global feed this weekend?
Oh, I'm sorry. I came in hot on the premiere, but I quite like this episode. It's hard at the moment against Australian Survivor. It's making everything look bad because it's so good. But yeah, no, we're trying to complain less, Rob. Play more games, complain less.
I like to think of it as I'm at a buffet and there's two plates of different types of meat, and I like meat, so I'll just eat both meats. Well, maybe I prefer one over the other, but I still take both.
One KFC?
Yes. It's like it's like having a buffet. One's Popeyes, one's KFC. I'm like, it's both chicken. I'ma have it. So
mm-hmm. Well, that analogy doesn't really track for me personally, but cheeses, two different types of cheese. I can understand.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah.
Rather use burrata, but I still think you're getting like a really good, I don't know, like a ricotta. Mm-hmm. I don't know. All cheese is great. Yeah. Survivors like cheese. That's the saying everyone says, right?
I think so.
That's the one. Cheese
pizza. Puya, what's coming up for you?
I've had a busy week here myself. It's been fun, though. You can find me if you're looking for me on a podcast. I just covered 90 Day Fiancé, latest episode with Brian Scally. It's been a very fun season. Speaking of fun seasons, Masked Singer has also been firing off on all cylinders. It's been a good season. Leon and I, before this podcast, talked about the latest episode. And a New Haven notable was unmasked this week, Rob. So you can find out who that is if you check out the podcast.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Liana goes through the whole history, and I don't think it's the first time she's done it on the podcast either. I have to call her out on it. And then I've got Bel Air. If you're interested in watching Bel Air or you have been watching, you can check out the coverage over on Post Show Recaps where Chappelle and I talk about Bel Air every week. We're having a good time there. Chappelle, of course, my number one fan, he is. So I love talking to him. He's great. You know, mm-hmm. I do my work. I do my part. Charity's great. And then also at the end of it all, if you are watching Big Brother Canada and you're curious who these players are, your guess is as good as mine, but we did draft them and we did that this week. We had a fun time with us. You can check out the draft, see who I got, see who Rob got, Taryn, Melissa, Amon, who was able to do his draft AFK. It's, you know, not many people are magicians. That Amon, he's built different. So you can find those all there. If you're looking for me off podcast, you can find me on Twitter at Puyas. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Puya, where I am putting out a lot of content there. Come through, say hi. I would appreciate it. And thank you too for having me. This means a lot to be able to be in a position to talk about Australian Survivors. I'm very grateful.
Yeah, this was a really fun podcast tonight. Really glad we got to do it. So we will be back. I will have another check-in with Shannon coming up after our 2-episode week of Australian Survivor. So be sure to check out all of our U.S. Survivor coverage as well. I had a great interview with Mike Turner today, not to mention our exit interview with the latest person voted out of the game. So check that all out at robisawebsite.com. And subscribe to our podcast feeds at robisawebsite.com/subscribe. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.